The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
I'm joined now by Damien McLaughlin, Professor of Marketing at the UCD Business School. I'm also joined by Aoife Barry, Assistant News Editor from thejournal.ie. It's that time of week where we look at some of the stories that made headlines. The one that I mentioned before this was the person who cracked their head laughing at a joke and tried to make a claim. Can you tell us about that, Aoife?
Yeah, sure. So there's a shop assistant injured her forehead, and she said it happened because she'd bent over laughing at a colleague of hers. Her colleague was making a joke, and it turned out that the joke was so good that she ended up, you know, leaning over, bent double with laughter, but managed to hit her head, she said, on a piece of metal that was there. It was obviously at knee height or whatever, however far she bent over.
Anybody find out what the joke was?
No, they actually...
It's been a really great joke.
They didn't hear about that in the Circuit Civil Court, from what I can see from the court report anyway. It happened in the Dundrum Shopping Centre in June 2016, so a couple of years ago. It takes a while for these cases to get to court. The headlines on it say that the claim is for 60 grand, but I think sometimes people, that can be kind of the maximum people can claim, so I'm not too sure if she exactly went in for the full damages there, but she didn't get it. The claim didn't succeed. They did say, obviously, you know, that she did really, you know, injure her forehead, that there were signs there that had happened to her, but that she basically had been distracted by her colleague, and that there was nothing she could have done in terms of training.
The employer seemed to be very civilised people, that they didn't pursue her for costs. And I thought the reporting was excellent as well, because the judge says there was nothing any of the defendants could have done, training otherwise, to prevent the accident.
Yeah.
So a good signal to other people maybe who are thinking about making a claim. You've got to take into account what the other side did they make all reasonable effort to protect you? Yes, they did. If you can't control yourself and you're laughing, you better watch your head or wear a crash helmet. So
yeah, that's the thing with the WRC as well. I mean, the idea is that it's all about like what the company did to protect the employee or not. Yeah. And in this case, you know, it was pretty clear that, you know, they had all the training done, that the issue was more that, you know, she just bent over and hit her head by accident. We see a lot of these cases coming through in terms of employees bringing cases about different things happening to them.
We're seeing a lot more of them as well getting rejected, and people taking the claim out of court, and things like finding on social media that they weren't hurt or that kind of development. Yeah. Do you think that there is still a claims culture, or was there ever a claims culture?
No, I think that there was. I think that, you know, everybody looks towards a legal profession for this. Obviously, if you ask a lawyer to take a case, he will take the case. But I do think there is a bit of a compo culture out there. But this is a very well reported piece, and I think that this kind of reporting, it's a long article, is a great way to disincentivize people to do it. I don't quite understand how the legal profession works on this, because I read something during the week about during the bailout that the IMF or whatever tried to break the legal stranglehold on Ireland. Yet then it seems that these cases can come to court fairly easy as well. So there's something about how the legal profession works here, I think, which is maybe worth our while thinking a little bit about also.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, all those cases that people read and they see whether or not people got damages, sometimes the cases can seem quite minor, then they got a lot of money, and that can maybe perhaps encourage some people. But I think most people I know wouldn't be trying to pursue any sort of claim. You're talking a good couple of years. You might lose a lot of money. So I don't think that there's necessarily a massive culture there of, every second person deciding to
pay. I think most employers do what they can to keep people safe. But one thing that has come up in the news in the whole area of safety is digital safety. And we heard that YouTube has turned off comments on videos where there's children involved. Can you tell me a little bit about that, Aoife?
Yeah, sure. So YouTube, the comments, when you think of YouTube, you immediately think of the comments, don't you?
It's the swamp of YouTube.
They're just so lovely.
Intelligence goes to die. Yeah.
They're just so lovely. It's where you go, you want to hear people you never want to meet in real life or leaving comments. There's obviously a lot of videos on YouTube that aren't just, you know, aimed at adults. It can be aimed at children as well. There's videos made by kids. You know, you have young kids making all sorts of videos. And YouTube has decided that it's going to turn off comments on all videos that contain young children. And that's because they basically have found out that there was an organised paedophile ring that was operating within plain sight of this YouTube, which had caused a major issue, and it led to advertisers boycotting the site. YouTube want to prevent that, and so they're deciding to cut these comments. There's obviously the child safety fears there, but I did find it very interesting that the advertising fears were high among their reasons.
It's a big thing there. Yeah, I mean, I think YouTube's, you know, I'm 50, so YouTube is a relatively new phenomenon in my life, but the the Variety magazine in the US publishes a list of the most influential people on teenagers every year, and 8 of the 10 are YouTube stars. So I brought this to class once, and I thought maybe just because I was older I didn't recognise it, but nobody in my class of 25 or 26 year olds recognise these people either. There is a huge subculture, deeply segmented subculture of this for young people in different age groups on YouTube. And I think Aoife is absolutely correct what YouTube is worried about. And remember, YouTube is owned by Google, What they're worried about is two things. One is that other advertisers will walk away, which is a big revenue loss for them, which is already happening, right?
Mm-hmm. Is revenue the only driver, though? I'd like to think that there's an ethical consideration here.
The second thing that they're concerned about is regulation, right? They do not want this to be regulated in the same way that other media actually are, because that then restricts their ability to innovate in the market. I think these are ethical companies, but it's a different kind of ethics. It's the ethics of information. So what exactly are you entitled to have access to from an informational point of view? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, standard ethics of protecting children, of course, is absolutely the core of what everybody thinks. But then the extent to which that interacts with the ethics of access to information, of course, is another part of the story.
And they do say as well that they're going to prioritise the launch of this AI moderator that's basically going to remove two times more individual comments than previously. So let's not forget that in these cases where you have comments, you know, something, they're not pre-moderated sometimes, or else, you know, you can have a mixture of pre and post moderation, and it can be cases where you need an actual AI, like artificial intelligence, going through to remove dodgy comments. Or frequently, you know, like with Facebook, you'll have people sitting in a room far, far away from where the comments are sometimes being made, and that they're the ones who are viewing these comments, or viewing, you know, disturbing images and things, and they're acting like the moderators, or they are the moderators. It's all these layers.
Same
of
old
moderation.
Stories as always it is with digital media. It's, you know, when your kids can't protect themselves, you have to protect them, not just in terms of what they're viewing, but also what they're putting on there. And then you have to do your best, as best as you can, control how they're spending their time online as well. So it's a warning. It's a warning for parents and for young people also.
There's a child safety story in that. But let's talk also about saving children and the row that broke out when a BBC presenter made some social media posts in Africa. Damien, tell us about that.
This is a fraud area. I did some work many years ago in the charity sector, and you know, I'm a marketing professor, so I was talking about marketing, and one of the NGOs, it was an Irish NGO, stopped me midstream and said, you know, we can't do that because you have to take into account the dignity of the recipient. It was a very, very strong lesson for me in terms of how you actually deal
with these issues. The story first.
The story basically here is Stacey Dooley, who I understand won Strictly Come Dancing, I think, before Christmas in the UK. Mm-hmm. I understand she's a documentary maker, and she went to Uganda as part of the comic relief kind of effort, and then made some comments on Twitter or Instagram, I'm not sure which it was, where she talked about, you know, how much she liked the children and so on. Mm-hmm. And David Lammy, who's a UK MP, took exception to this. And the idea, I think, is that a white person coming in to save the black people in Africa, it's just not how this works. And you know, mm-hmm. I've been to Uganda many times. That's not how Uganda is. I mean, it's obviously a place which is challenged.
But do you think that was someone being overly sensitive? I mean, she was over there doing some positive work, and he took offense. I don't think she set out
with the intention of causing offense. But when you step into this space, I think you have to be very, very respectful of the people who are receiving the aid, and then I think you also have to be respectful of the people who are supporting, because they're supporting on the basis of a particular understanding. And I think David Lammy's point might be two things. First of all, you cannot have this white savior of black Africa kind of idea. Mm-hmm. And the second part of it is, let's not perpetuate the myth amongst people who maybe haven't been to Africa, or who are not on top of these issues, that in some way you're supporting this or you're helping this if you donate to the cause. It seemed to me from wider reading that, in fact, what David Lammy's problem is actually with comic relief itself, rather than necessarily with this young person, Stacey Dooley.
It's kind of a reason. It's a way, you know, it's a way of starting the discussion, and it's really good to see the narrative, I think, shifting around these, you know, fundraising, and shifting around the idea of, you know, a white person who's well off going to quote unquote Africa, as if Africa's one country full of people who need help, and not full of many individual countries, you know. And I think it's really good to see that conversation happening. It really makes you think as well about your presumptions and your own biases, and how you view charity work NGO work as well.
I guess it sort of makes a point about the commercial nature of this charity activity also, because I understand just from friends that she's actually quite a well-known, well-regarded young person in the UK, thought of highly by the general public, mm-hmm. whoever that might be. And I'm sure it's a bit of a whiz for Comic Relief to get her down there, and I'm sure they got a lot of publicity on the back of it. She's strong on social media. So a bit of a backfire on their part. I mean, I would have thought Comic Relief should have been stronger in this space, particularly given the experience that they have and who's running it.
We did get a few text messages in about the last segment, and I'll show you some of them now. One person said, I worked in the courts and I've seen what people claim for. There's definitely a compo culture out there. Another person said, the guy complaining must be an idiot. I think they're having a go at you, Damien, because she's over there helping and she can't help if the colour of her skin is white. Are we forbidding all white people to help and say that they're like the people over there? So obviously we're hitting people's emotions all over the place.
I think you've got to help in a culturally appropriate way.
Completely,
I don't see what the difficulty
and the idea
is.
Of people over there versus people over here.
People over here,
not really the
not
kind
like
of
that.
Discussion. Yeah, you know, it's
point.
Not the way you'd be talking about it.
Yeah. That's fair enough. Yeah. The next news story we're going to look at. I was actually up in Temple Street yesterday with my son, and I saw in the elevator there was a sign that said, "There's been a case of measles. You know, we need to be very aware of this." But it turns out that an anti-vaxxer family introduced measles again to Costa Rica on a holiday. Damien, can you tell us what happened there?
Yeah, it seems that I think it's a French family, went to Costa Rica on their holidays, and it looks like their little boy had measles, and they've given measles to a whole bunch of people. So people from the plane and people they came into contact are now in quarantine because there is no measles in Costa Rica.
What do you make of that kind of Aoife, what's your view? This is, by the way, is Aoife from thejournal.ie. What do you think of anti-vaxxers?
We're seeing more and more discussion and more stories coming out about vaccination, about anti-vaccination, and about people who maybe don't seem to realise the dangers of not vaccinating a child, or of assuming that there's this idea of herd immunity, and that because we don't have polio anymore, because measles rates are very low, that means there's not a risk, when actually the reasons why those are so low or polio doesn't is because vaccines were invented.
Would you find people, for instance, what rules do you think should be out there to encourage vaccination?
I don't think that if you want to encourage people to vaccinate, that what you should do is punish people in terms of, you know, legally if they don't vaccinate, because I think that acts as kind of almost an incentive to go against that idea of people will see that as a nanny state thing. I think the HSE showed really well the power of their campaign when the rates of the HPV vaccine were dropping in terms of young girls getting that vaccine. That was dropping. HSE came out and had a very strong campaign, and now the rates have started to go up again. And again, you had a lot of people talking about their own personal stories about cervical cancer. Those are the things that help, you know, those personal stories, the kind of the evidence showing the reasons why vaccination helps people does tend to actually make a change.
I think it's useful to explain the actual science to people about how this actually
Completely.
Works. I have two daughters who are, you know, grown up now, but they, when this was coming around, we were very concerned. We spoke to our doctor about it, and the question we asked him is, because he had kids the same age as ours, was, have you had this for your children? He said, yes, I have, and I wouldn't hesitate to get it again. But I do think the idea that somebody can decide not to vaccinate their child and then just show up in a classroom or in a primary school without any consequences, that to me seems to be somewhat unacceptable, or can access things like the Scouts,
or even could go to a country like Costa Rica. Let's just say that you were put in charge of creating some system to ensure people get vaccinations. In Ireland, cases are up. There's a recent report by UNICEF. Measles cases in Ireland have increased by 244% in the last year.
If I had young kids again, I would want them to go to a daycare centre where every child had been vaccinated. I don't think that's an unreasonable question to ask. And same thing in primary schools. Have your kids been vaccinated? I don't think that's an unreasonable question to ask. And I think if I was the Costa Rican government, I would introduce a regulation now that you have to have a measles stamp on your visa. I don't see what the problem with that is.
Uh-huh. And I think as well, sometimes with these situations, you kind of have to ask, why are people behaving this way? So what are the reasons why people are against vaccines, or they're curious about vaccines, or they feel they have negative feelings toward them? And look at those and see, is it an education issue? Is it an information issue? You know, parents are going to be concerned about their kids on day one. Why, you know, what is this going on? Trying to get it from the root rather than kind of going from the last point, because otherwise I think you face people going completely against any move to try and encourage more vaccination. Yeah.
If you started to make a kind of a vaccination or disease survey part of people coming or going anywhere, I think that would upset a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at statistics from the World Health Organization, I remember a few years ago looking at cases of AIDS in Ireland, and a huge amount of them had actually come. We had imported them in. People had come to this country who were carrying the infection. Now, my feeling is it's a little unfair to import in a disease, no matter who it is or what their situation. I don't care about the whole
debate. I don't think you import humans, though. I mean,
you're importing a disease when you bring someone in who's sick. So,
well,
for
I think
instance,
it's maybe a bit more complicated
Ricans,
when you're talking about AIDS versus measles, you know, and I think there's a lot of work being done in Ireland to raise awareness about HIV, AIDS, about retroviral drugs, about getting people to the stage where they can have access to PrEP, for example. So
I'm not saying they're the same, though, but what I'm saying is, if you went the route that Damien had described of saying you can't come in
people.
Here... Unless you can show that you've had your vaccination, is that a bit hard?
I think there's many countries in the world where if you're traveling as a tourist, you have to have certain stamps on your little yellow card. in order to access the country. They don't always ask you for the card. I think I've been to Costa Rica a couple of times. It's a wonderful, well-educated balance. It's actually very like Ireland in terms of how it looks and so on. As beautiful.
Not the weather.
Does every country but does every country have a good vaccination program? You know, are you coming from a country that maybe there isn't access for you? Maybe you don't have the money to pay for vaccination? Yeah. I think you could kind of get, it could be a bit...
No, but if the Costa Ricans abolished their army about 40 years ago with the idea they would spend all that money on education. Mm. So everybody speaks English and everybody is literate. They've obviously also made the decision to eliminate measles, given a relatively lower GDP than we do. I think they're entitled to the dignity of that decision themselves in order to say, actually, if you're from France and you're an anti-vaccine, that's fine. Mm-hmm. You can go somewhere else on your holidays. But please don't come to Costa Rica.
Well, I'm going
to
stay on the topic of getting your shots, but it's a different kind of shooting because there's a shooting range in the UK where you can buy a picture of Shamima Begum, who is the very, very famous lady who had run away to join ISIS.
Yeah.
You can buy her image to use on targets. What would you make of that?
It's just really grim. I mean, it's really gross. I mean, the story itself is a really complicated and not very nice story. No. Obviously, you have three, Shamima Begum, who's only 19, was one of three young British women who were in school in London. They left in February 2015 to join the Islamic State. I mean, that decision alone has obviously drastically changed their lives. Now that she is in a refugee camp at the moment, her citizenship has been revoked and she just had a newborn child as well. It's just a very, very complicated story. There's a lot of ill feeling towards her, but Do you the idea of maybe encouraging this, shooting somebody's face because they represent something you don't like?
I'm going to make a confession here, actually. I had a teacher in school and we used to put his face on a dartboard. I actually fed it. Now, said that, I was 16.
It's probably, slightly different. I mean, it's troubling, but perhaps not troubling in the same way this is.
I think
is.
This young woman was influenced, in a way, many people in Ireland were influenced by certain things at young ages over the year. Went off to the Middle East at 15 years of age. I mean, who can make a rational decision at 15 years of age?
Now, the shooting range, by the way, it's airsoft. I should just make it clear. It's not people shooting actual real big rifles or anything. No. It's little plastic BBs. You can also shoot at Osama bin Laden, Adolf Hitler, Donald Trump, Margaret Thatcher, Jose Mourinho, Chucky, Kim Jong-un, and Justin Bieber, strangely enough.
Yeah.
Do you think the whole idea of shooting at anyone's image is okay, or should it only be a bullseye?
Well, the problem here is that this young woman, I expect, will eventually end up back in the UK and she now is a target for violence, given how strong. I mean, there are British soldiers who have served fighting against the broad in the Middle Eastern area. So it is an emotive issue in the UK.
But I'm never going to try and justify violence. But do you think that people should be welcoming her with open arms? I mean, let's not get away from fact that she went and joined ISIS.
She went and joined ISIS, as a teenager and as
an adult. And she's an adult now and still hasn't renounced.
She is,
them.
And I mean, she has had her citizen revoked. She's going to be treated as, I suppose, the British government wants to treat her. She's not going to be welcomed with a parade back home at all. But I think that there's something distasteful, I think, for a lot of people about using her image as a way of a target, specifically as a target of hate. But I think there are some people who they will want to do this as a way of showing exactly how they feel about figures. Like you named off a number of those people there.
Yeah. Is it a more positive thing, though, to use someone's face on a target than to actually do something violent?
I think, for instance,
if you were full of rage, I know young guys in the inner city and they like to go and they go to a boxing club and then they don't box the head off people out in the public. I mean,
I think there's a difference between boxing and...
I think boxing teaches you respect for violence. In fact, in a controlled way, you understand that you can actually, when you hit somebody, that they are actually hurt. You know, Britain, the United States, France, and Russia after the Second World War led a tremendous campaign to change residual attitudes in Germany. Away from Nazism. I mean, obviously not everybody in Germany was ever a Nazi, but they effectively re-educated the population, did the same thing in Japan. It was a tremendously positive thing to do for the world. Here we have a relatively small number of people. They're all mainly young people. They still have a contribution to make to society. They could be re-educated at relatively low expense for a great country like Britain to do. I don't think that's a problem at all.
Your target should be the Islamic State is the issue here.
Absolutely.
The Islamic State and people brainwashing young people. It's not necessarily the individuals themselves who might not have been in the right frame of mind to actually decide to join them. We all know the reasons why people get involved in situations.
Aoife Barry from the Journal. I'm just going to give the last word to you. The People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals have called Stephen Irwin an animal harasser and people are furious about it. Can you tell us briefly about that?
Sure. So PETA, who are never clever ones that don't know how to get publicity. They're absolutely brilliant at getting publicity for themselves. They sparked backlash after Google had a Google Doodle of Steve Irwin on what would have been his 57th birthday, and PETA accused him in a tweet of harassing animals, saying that animals should be left alone in their natural habitats. I do think animals should be left alone in their natural habitats, but I don't think that tweeting about a person who's dead and who did really love animals in an attempt to get some sort of publicity. I mean, listen, we all know what they were doing. Do you know what I mean?
I just say they're particularly effective at this space, and there is a there is a market for their activity, and it's unfortunate for his family.
Yeah.
Well, look, I think he's remembered this way on his birthday.
I want to say a big thank you to Damien McLaughlin, Professor of Marketing at the UCD Smurfit Business School, for coming into us, as well as Aoife Barry, Assistant News Editor from thejournal.ie, for covering our week in trending.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.